evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, November 18, 2015. President Kiir addresses lawmakers with a message of peace.
Welcome your brothers, your sisters, your sons, and your daughters. Welcome them with open hearts, reconcile, forgive each other, forget the past, open new pages, create trust, build confidence among yourselves, and live in peace and harmony.
And a militia group in Western Equatoria is demanding for government positions.
Some of them were even soldiers who joined hands to fight against the LRA in the area. They felt deprived of even integration into the army or getting promotions, those who were in the army already.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir delivered a wide-ranging speech to Parliament today in which he extended an olive branch to the opposition, saying he is committed to implementing the peace deal he signed with the rebels. Kiir encouraged all members of the Parliament to welcome back members of the armed opposition. In a copy obtained by South Sudan in Focus, today's speech is mistakenly dated October 18, 2015. Waki Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
Wearing his trademark cowboy hat, President Kiir glided into Parliament, where lawmakers from both houses of the National Legislature had patiently waited for nearly 2 hours to hear Mr. Kiir's speech. President Kiir appeared at ease from beginning to end, sprinkling his 27-minute speech with jokes in both Arabic and English, sending lawmakers into fits of laughter. Unlike in the past, the president did not mention corruption or directly address the country's widespread food insecurity. Instead, the president focused on economic reforms.
In regards to the high food prices and fuel shortages, my government has taken serious measures. For food, the government has secured funds and contracted credible banks to import food items. And for fuel, we have signed a contract with international company to close the gap of fuel shortages in the country.
South Sudanese have complained bitterly about skyrocketing commodity prices and persistent acute fuel shortages that have dragged for several months ever since the South Sudanese pound began falling against the United States dollar. President Kiir acknowledged the ongoing economic crisis has hurt the lives of many, if not most, ordinary citizens. He blamed the country's economic hardships on two things: the conflict that erupted in late 2013 and the shutdown of oil production in 2012.
In order to reduce our dependency on oil revenue and our need for hard currencies to support basic commodities such as food and fuel, we need to invest significantly in our economic infrastructure, particularly our road networks, and increase our productive capacity. Therefore, in order to free up public resources for investment in production and economic infrastructure, we will need to reduce the size of our public sector in non-critical areas.
President Kiir says now that he has signed a peace agreement with Riek Machar, the leader of the armed opposition, his government will increase oil production in Upper Nile State and resume production at oil fields in Unity State, which produced no oil during the 20 months of conflict. 98% of South Sudan's revenues had come from the oil sector before the conflict and the shutdown in production. President Kiir says he has instructed Finance Minister David Deng Atorbey and Central Bank Governor Cornelio Corriom to realign the official dollar to pound exchange rate with the black market rate in order to address the physical challenges facing the country.
This realignment, Ajama, is necessary, and I have been always wondering when I see so many umbrellas in the market here on the streets. The umbrellas have turned to become the forexes of exchange, and they have become the black market forexes. I wonder when I see somebody with no good dress and possessing a lot of dollars, where do they get these dollars from? This is something that all of us should go in to find out, because these are the people slaughtering this country.
The president said his administration is also prepared to table a National Revenue Authority bill in parliament, which he insists will improve the collection of non-oil revenues and move the government away from its heavy reliance on oil revenues. And while the president sounded conciliatory toward the SPLM-IO, encouraging lawmakers to welcome its members back into government, he accused them of continuing to launch attacks against the government forces.
On Sunday, November 15, the rebels of Riek Machar attacked Mar in Jongole State, and 23 people were killed. The following day, 16th of November, they attacked Nyaldew in Unity State. And that, in that attack, most of the cattle of the civil population in the town were all taken by the rebels. The moment they dislodged our forces, they were able to take the cows. And when they were dislodged, cows were already gone. So it is something that happened. As I speak, the rebels are still planning for more attacks on Makal, Tarjas, Bentiu, Kona, Gwit, Lair, and Banapaj.
SPLM-IO military spokesman Dickson Galuak yesterday accused the government forces of launching attacks on rebel positions in Unity State since Sunday. Despite the attacks against the government forces, Mr. Kir says he remains fully committed to implementing the peace deal and has formed a committee to receive an advance team of the SPLM-IO who are expected to return to Juba next week.
I appeal to all of you to welcome your brothers, your sisters, your sons, and your daughters as they come back home to South Sudan. Welcome them with open hearts, reconcile, forgive each other, forget the past, open new pages, create trust, build confidence among yourselves, and live in peace and harmony.
To that end, the president says the South Sudanese people have more things that unite them than divide them. And he called on all lawmakers to unite ranks for the overall good of the country, a line that drew a big applause from the MPs. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wodo in Juba.
The leader of the SPLM in opposition, SPLM-DC, says he welcomes President Kiir's pledge to fully implement the peace deal. But Lamakola Jawin says he disagrees with President Kiir on his ideas for economic reform and his determination to join East African Community, saying membership in the regional bloc will not solve South Sudan's economic problems. For VOA News, Philip Thorn-Aleu reports from Juba.
Lamakola Jawin says he was glad to hear Mr. Kiir committing himself to personally implementing the peace agreement he signed with Riek Machar.
And this is very important. Because, you know, for the last 2-3 months, we have not seen such an outright and forthright commitment from the government. So we hope this one is a commitment to see that no roadblocks again are put on the way of peace.
Akol says he hopes this means administration's officials will speak with one voice in their support of fully implementing the peace deal. But Akol says he does not like what he heard about solving the country's economic crisis.
The question of non-oil revenue as an alternative to oil is very unrealistic. We tried it in 2012. It didn't work. I wonder how you can raise a 2% to replace 98%. That is a very difficult equation to balance. The only solution is peace. When peace comes, the production of oil will go up gradually. Of course, it will not go back to the old level overnight.
The conflict reduced overall oil production to about 165,000 barrels from 240,000 barrels per day before the outbreak of the conflict in December 2013. In addition to the shutdown in oil production, oil prices have plummeted globally, leading to an even bigger reduction in government revenues. But Akol concedes that if there is peace, another sectors of the economy, like agriculture, will grow. During his speech, President Kiir said that at head of state later this month, South Sudan will be admitted to the 5-member economic bloc, the East African Community. Akol says he also disagrees with President Kiir's effort to join the East African Community. He says South Sudan will not benefit from joining the regional bloc as the country has no exports to speak of and will not be able to compete with more developed East African countries.
Even the revenue we get, the kind of non-oil revenue he talked about, will be reduced because we will be exporting commodities from East African communities at a low rate of customs or even zero rate. So we are just actually jumping into the dark.
Reaction among South Sudanese was mixed to the president's speech. Daniel, a Juba resident who listened to the president's speech over local radio and referred not to have his last name used, described it as comprehensive, but urged Mr. Kiir to implement his proposed economic reforms and not just talk about it.
Much has been said in this country, but at the end of the day, it will only impact maybe in hours or 2 to 3 days or in a week or in a month and disappear in the long-term run.
Other residents say the speech gave them hope that something will improve. But like opposition leader Akol, they say implementing the peace agreement is the only way out of the ongoing economic crisis. For VOA News, I'm Philip Tona Leo in Juba.
Authorities in Western Equatorial State have signed what they call a preliminary agreement with two groups of gunmen operating to end hostilities in the state. As VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Washington, the head of the government's negotiating team says one of the leaders of the armed group has refused to negotiate, saying he is aligned with the SPLM in opposition.
The chairman of the government delegations to the negotiations, Victor Kpeyawandu, says the agreement was reached between the so-called Western Equatorial Arrow Boys. It is the second agreement signed in the state this week. The first one was signed by civilians in Western Equatoria's Mundir West who want to return home after fleeing to the bush 3 months ago. Pia says these are the main groups causing insecurity in Western Equatoria. He says they operate with mobile pilot bases on roads linking the state counties to the capital Yambio.
Some of them were even soldiers who joined hands to fight against the LRA in the area. After that, they felt they have not been compensated or even appreciated for what they did by the government, and they felt deprived of even integration into the army or getting promotions, those who were in the army already. So that was precisely the source of their anger.
Pierre says the agreement addressed six areas of concern, among them reintegration of their forces and other organized forces which would be employed to work with the government. Many Arrow Boys are soldiers who are too young to be enlisted and are demanding their rights to an education.
They have acknowledged the government and they say they are not against the government in any way. They are not opposing the government, but they are operating as aggrieved youth within the government, trying to claim their rights from the government.
The fighting across Western Equatoria State started in April. Last month, the state's deputy governor, Bulen Abiatara, said 12 of those hiding in bush for the last 3 months starved to death. Over 1,400 fled to Yei due to the insecurity. Abiatara said those most at risk of starvation are women and children. To end the suffering of civilians in the state, Pierre says, the groups from both sides will convene a meeting after the first report is approved by the national government. The second meeting will also involve how the Arrow Boys will be integrated into the national army.
After that preliminary agreement, there is a body which is to go, a delegation from the central government here that will know the parade, their number, and they see their request for promotions and so on, because some are claiming positions of generals and so on.
The peace agreement was mediated by the church. Efforts to reach church leaders in the state were unsuccessful. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what is the rate of crime among South Sudanese Americans? We'll give you the answer to that after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who in your family do you admire the most and why?
My father, very influential in a very modest and diplomatic way.
One of my uncle, the reason why I admire him most was he's determined and he's the type that likes to share ideas with people.
Well, my wife, because she's my leader. He's the one who gives me what I want from her, for my children, even me also.
I love my young brother because we look like, we resemble, so I love him.
I admire my daddy most because there was a divorce around 6 years and he took care of me throughout up till now.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudanese diaspora in North America have been making headlines of late for the wrong reasons. Earlier this month, two young South Sudanese men in the Midwestern city of Omaha, Nebraska, were charged with armed robbery after allegedly holding up a supermarket attendant. In June, another lost boy from South Sudan was shot and killed by a police officer in Kentucky after the boy tried to strike the officer with a pole. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Gordon Boyce says in his capacity as the Ambassador of Diaspora Affairs in North America, he is concerned that more and more South Sudanese are finding themselves on the wrong side of the law in the United States.
Even in Canada, there are even this year one South Sudanese youth killed his roommate. So there are a lot of criminal activities happening due to the fact that the families are breaking up, and also the fact that most of our kids might be suffering from traumatic experiences that because of war in South Sudan, when they came to U.S., they didn't get psychological assistance.
Boy says one of the reasons why crime is increasing among South Sudanese is because families are breaking apart at higher rates. He says parents often have to work long hours to provide for their children, which unfortunately takes away quality time to teach their kids right from wrong.
And also the difference of cultures. In the United States, the kids are not being disciplined like we have in South Sudan. In the U.S., the kids have rights like adults. So it's very difficult. Then there's a cultural shock for their parents. So the parents found themselves in a very difficult situation.
The South Sudanese Embassy in Washington, D.C. has placed a moratorium on deportation cases involving U.S. and Canadian South Sudanese residents since 2013. Boy says there are 378 cases that have been brought to his office, but he says they have advised the U.S. government that they will not go through with the deportation of South Sudanese who have committed crimes.
And the reason is very simple. We cannot accept people being deported without us knowing who are their parents, who are their relatives in the South, you know, and the ways to integrate them. Because when you receive somebody deported, you as a government must be responsible for his accommodation and his rehabilitation. So we are not ready for that.
Boy says all deportations should be on a voluntary basis and should only be conducted if the safety of the individual can be guaranteed. He says he believes that sending South Sudanese back to Kenya or Ethiopia is the best option available for troubled individuals.
I think it would be much better, because if they stay here, still they come out, they go back to jail. They come out, they go back to jail. And the system in the U.S. is not helping too, the criminal system. Because once you have a criminal record, you know, you cannot even get a job.
As for helping troubled South Sudanese residing in North America, Boy says the entire South Sudanese community will need to step up to help those brothers and sisters in need. He says the community will need to help them find counseling, as well as help them enroll in higher education so that they can rebuild their lives. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
At least two people are dead and seven others have been detained after anti-terrorist operation in northern Paris linked to last week's attack around the French capital. For VOA, Lisha Bryan reports from Paris that the fate of the suspected mastermind in the attacks is unclear.
The dead include a woman who set off her explosives vest during the seven-hour standoff with police early Wednesday in the suburb of Saint-Denis. Another seven people were detained during the raid that targeted an apartment in the central part of town. Following the operation, Paris prosecutor François Moulins confirmed it targeted Belgian jihadist Abdelhamid Abaoud, the suspected mastermind of last last week's attacks that killed 129 people. He said the identities of those killed and detained were still being verified. More clarity is expected later in the day. Abaoud, who has been linked to other terrorist operations, was previously reported to be in Syria. Reports suggest he may have traveled to Europe at least once this year, underscoring larger concerns about intelligence lapses and the security risk posed by returning jihadists.
Le porte-avions Charles de Gaulle vient d'appareiller.
In a speech to French mayors, President François Hollande outlined a series of measures to fight the Islamic State group, which has claimed responsibility for the attack. France launched a third set of airstrikes against IS targets in Syria and is deploying the Charles de Gaulle aircraft carrier in the Mediterranean to reinforce its strike capacity. Hollande is also calling for a grand coalition that includes both the United States and Russia to fight IS. Closer to home, the government wants to extend the current state of emergency for another 3 months. Hollande also says he wants to change the French constitution to better deal with terrorism and other crises, a proposal that has drawn criticism from rights advocates. Meanwhile, the search continues for suspects and accomplices linked to the Paris attacks. Another key suspect, Brussels-born Salah Abdeslam, may still be on the loose. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Pope Francis travels to Kenya next week to kick off his first Africa tour, and the excitement is building. Since becoming Pope in March of 2013, Pope Francis has been shaking up the church with his progressive views on everything from homosexuality to divorce. He has made headlines for his comments on relaxing restrictions on divorced Catholics, possible support for married priests, and more compassion for gay people. Jill Craig visited a Nairobi Catholic church to see how the Pope's less traditional views are being received.
Churchgoers here at Nairobi's Holy Family Minor Basilica may seem just a bit more joyful this Sunday as they prepare for the arrival of a special visitor to their country.
Actually, we are waiting a message of hope from Pope, from how he conducts himself. I think he will bring a good impact and a positive attitude to people, and we should embrace what he's bringing to Kenyans because he's our role model.
Pope Francis is seen as more progressive than his predecessors. The question is how those views will resonate with Africans during his first visit to the continent. In the past decade, Kenya has seen breakaway orders of Catholic priests who decided to get married. Pope Francis has not condoned this, but he has reportedly said the Vatican is looking into the question of married priests. Adonai Tendwa doesn't believe that priests should be allowed to get married.
Because it's better for someone leading others spiritually, being single, just the way he is. You know, if you say he's going to get married, some things will come in. He needs to take care of the family. He has stress of the family, the wife, and everything. I think spiritually it will affect.
Samuel Gitao agrees.
When they marry, I feel they'll not be able to concentrate in the church affairs, yeah.
Pope Francis has said he wants to see a greater role for women in Catholicism, but that he is against ordaining women priests. Church usher Josephine Kivuva agrees.
Because the men are the ones who have been priests up till now, and they have done pretty a good job. And also, I think the disciples that Jesus chose when he was here on earth, they were all men, particularly maybe for a reason, for us to take as an example.
But Rogers Mwindwa says women should get the opportunity too.
Yes, because in the kingdom of God, even women should have some part to play.
It is on the topic of homosexuality that Pope Francis may most diverge with church members in Africa. While the Pope says marriage should remain an institution between a man and a woman, he has not categorically ruled out civil unions. And he has urged love and mercy for gay people, asking who is he to judge them. Kenya, on the other hand, outlines its stance clearly. Homosexuality is illegal. Church members say they do not condone it.
Homosexuality shouldn't be there. Yeah. Because at the first, in the book, in the Bible we read, we need to get married and bring up children. Now when you bring homosexuality, that one will not be having a family.
But Catholics here say they are ready to set differences of opinion aside.
When the Pope gives us direction, we need to follow it according to the tradition of the Church.
Pope Francis is scheduled to arrive in Nairobi November 25th. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. President Salva Kiir delivered a wide-ranging speech to Parliament today in which he welcomed back the armed opposition, saying he's committed to implementing the peace deal he signed with former Vice President Riek Machar. He encouraged all MPs to embrace members of the armed opposition when an advance team returns to Juba sometime next week for the good of the country. In an advance copy this program obtained, the speech is mistakenly dated October 18, 2015. President Kiir appeared at ease when he began his 27-minute speech approximately 2 hours later than expected, sprinkling it with jokes in both Arabic and English. Unlike in past speeches, this time the president did not mention government corruption or the country's widespread food insecurity. Instead, he focused on economic reforms and promoted the government's effort to join the regional economic bloc, the East African Community. The head of the opposition SPLM-DC party says he welcomes President Kiir's pledge to fully implement the peace deal, but Lamicole says he disagrees with President Kiir on his proposed economic reforms and his determination to join the EAC, saying membership in the bloc will not solve South Sudan's serious economic problems. Cole says he hopes the president's remarks today means administration officials will speak with one voice in the future and offer their support to fully implement the peace deal as well. But Cole says South Sudan is not ready to join the EAC because it does not have a strong economy at the moment and may not for some time. And finally, authorities in western Equatoria State have signed what they call a preliminary agreement with two groups of gunmen operating in the state to end hostilities. The head of the government's negotiating team says one of the leaders of the armed groups has refused to negotiate, saying he's aligned with the SPLM-IO. The chairman of the government's delegation to the negotiations, Victor Kiyawandu, says the agreement was reached between the government and Western Equatoria Arrow Boys. It's the second agreement signed in the state this week with opposition groups. The first one was signed by civilians in Western Equatoria's Mundri West, who want to return home after fleeing to the bush 3 months ago in order to escape the fighting there. Kia says these are the main groups causing insecurity in western Equatoria. He says they operate with mobile bases on roads that link the state counties to the capital, Yambio. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Cease Fire with Kebas featuring Young Bo. Hey.
We need some peace, y'all. Harmony is what you're dying for. Yep.
Zeta Duban, Junu Sudan, Bele Jamil wa Aziz, Lakin Siyasa Shilu Nasfa, Ukate Zaman, Nina Kula Nakan, Mashin, Leki Dam, Shuf Shabab Bimud, Iyal Bimud, Bejian, Metalga, Ofof Kaman, Kuli Yoma Halbika, Mama be correct. We want peace.
We have been listening to Kibas featuring Young Bo with the song Cease Fire. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Mia filmia, bada mendin fadia, lakin jibu katia. Zaman to wilma dergo fumia.